Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Peter Kanellis, the editor of the Boston Globe's editorial page, who served as editor of the Globe's seven-part series on Mitt Romney. He joins us from Tampa, Florida, and we will discuss whether Ann Romney's well-received speech last night will improve her husband's likability factor, which is at 29% compared to Barack Obama's 51%. Then we will preview Condoleezza Rice's speech to the Republican convention with someone who worked with her in the Bush administration, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, the former chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell. We will look into what a Romney foreign policy might look like, given the preponderance of neocons on his team, and what wildcards might happen in terms of overseas crises that could sway the election. Then finally, John Nichols, the Nation's magazine's Washington correspondent and the associate editor of the Capital Times, the daily newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin, joins us. We will discuss the Wisconsin contingent. Governor Walker, the head of the RNC, Reince Priebus, and tonight's keynote speaker, Paul Ryan, the Republican vice presidential nominee, as well as try to determine how Paul Ryan can sell himself as a savior of Medicare, which the Ryan plan intends to cut. Joining us now from Tampa, Florida, is Peter Kanellis, the editor of the Boston Globe's editorial page. Previously, he has been the Globe's Washington bureau chief and the author of the National Perspective column since 2003. In 2007, he served as editor of the Globe's seven-part series on Mitt Romney. He also served as editor of the Globe's seven-part series on the life of Ted Kennedy and was editor of The Last Line, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Peter Kanellis.
Thank you very much.
And let's go back to yesterday, since you've been down there in Tampa. Most people seem to think that Ann Romney knocked it out of the ballpark. And I mentioned in the opening that her husband's likability factor is at 29% compared to Barack Obama's at 51%. And presumably that was her task to move the meter a bit on that. How do you think she did?
Yeah, I think she did extremely well also. She obviously is aware that people see the Romneys as being wealthy and privileged and, you know, having so many advantages that it's hard to imagine them identifying with what the average person is going through, particularly economically. But, you know, she managed to get in that when they first married, they had almost no money, and that Mitt has worked hard all his life, and that even when you have money, you have problems, and it's difficult raising the five children and tiring and disease. And, you know, she managed to humanize them through the kind of common threats that that people face: illness, economic problems, family challenges, etc.
And do you think that this film that's out now, which seems designed to also chip away at Barack Obama's likability factor, the it's called Obama 2016, paid for by some Republican deep pockets, and apparently it's I haven't seen it, but apparently it's quite a hit job, pretty much designed to make the president of the United States extremely unlikable.
Well, I've heard about that movie, too. I haven't seen it, but my sense is that that movie will play only to people who already hate Barack Obama, who are going to plunk down money just to, you know, get a really bad look at him. I don't think that will affect the mainstream. I think that's the thing about these convention speeches is it's a rare opportunity for the candidates to get beyond the base and get beyond the people who love them and hate them and speak to those who may be a little bit unsure about them. And that's why I think Ann Romney did her husband a favor last night.
So speaking of the base, what is the feeling there in Tampa in terms of who's there? My sense is, and I was reading a piece recently saying that going back 22 years ago when Pat Buchanan rocked the Republican convention in Houston and upset George Bush Sr., it seems like that the Pat Buchanan contingency is pretty much the majority today.
Well, Pat Buchanan was particularly on social issues, and he was then backed up by Marilyn Quayle, who was the wife of the vice president at that time. And, you know, they both gave speeches that are very similar to the one that Rick Santorum gave yesterday. But while Santorum was in a pretty good speaking slot, he was not in the slot that was covered by the broadcast networks and thus thereby, you know, seen by millions more people. And he was also more or less the only one. There were more people that were emphasizing economic issues than social issues. So, you know, they stuck Santorum in there to try to shore up one portion of the base, but I don't think that he was seen by enough people to really shape the convention the way Pat Buchanan did.
But if you had an applause meter, so far the biggest applause that's topped the meter so far from my cursory look at it would be the Santorum's line in reference to abortion.
Yeah, I mean, and you could see when, at least on the feed that we were watching internally, when they went and looked at the audience, you know, there were people who practically had tears in their eyes, people whose, you know, mouths were shaping in various expressions of emotion. I mean, you know, obviously that's an issue that tugs at certain people's heartstrings in a very powerful way, and they were just yelling at the top of their throat. But I don't know that. And obviously, you know, this is a sensitive issue for both parties nationally, but I don't think that Santorum by himself was able to sort of define the convention's position on that.
Again, I'm speaking with Peter Kanellis, the editor of the Boston Globe's editorial page. Previously, he had been the Globe's Washington bureau chief and the author of the National Perspective column since 2003. In 2007, he served as editor of the Globe's seven-part series on Mitt Romney, and he also served as editor of the Globe's seven-part series on the life of Ted Kennedy, and was editor of The Last Line, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. And he is in Tampa, Florida, as we speak. Now, you've done a lot of work on Mitt Romney's taxes, and that was a very, very hot story there for a while, and one which clearly Mitt Romney simply wanted off the headlines because he simply refused to deal with the substance of the story, which would have settled all of the questions, and he's refused to provide any more evidence, leading one to speculate that either he's hiding something or he's just incredibly arrogant and doesn't think the American people deserve to know about his taxes. Do you think he succeeded? Obviously, the attention's now on the convention.
Well, I mean, it depends what we don't know what is in the taxes, so you can't say whether he succeeded or failed unless you know what the alternative is. But it didn't play out well for him. I mean, I think that 29% favorability or likability rating, I think, was affected by the tax issue. I mean, you know, huge numbers of people, tens if not hundreds of millions of people, you know, now view the Romneys as extremely wealthy and privileged. And you know, part of that was all of the coverage and attention that was dwelling on those tax returns. Now, you know, if there is something that's quite, you know, problematic in the tax returns, or something that's, you know, perfectly legal but nonetheless would offend a lot of people, that he took advantage of some loophole in some way, you know, maybe it's better that he kept quiet about it. And obviously, he's living to fight another day, and he's still a very viable candidate for president. But the whole episode did not exactly play well for him, and he didn't really walk away unscathed. I think it certainly affected a lot of people's views of him.
Well, but it doesn't it indicate a certain attitude? I mean, when you say that Ann Romney and Mitt Romney are seen as being wealthy and privileged, I think that isn't that aren't they being seen fairly accurately? That's not to suggest that they in any way are there's anything wrong with that, but it's just a fact, isn't it?
Well, it is just a fact, but obviously there are, you know, lots of facts going to who somebody is, and you know, he's also a man of faith. He's also fairly modest in his temperament. He's not an extravagant person. You know, he's somebody who is deeply knowledgeable on business issues and has been, you know, a shrewd determinant of investments in his time. You know, there are ways that the same facts could come out in a way that is more flattering to him than somebody who pays very little taxes and is so concerned about the issue that he doesn't even want to release more years of taxes because, you know, it'll so there'll be so many bones to pick through that it might damage his reputation. I think people appreciate that and are concerned about it.
Well, but on the religion aspect, do you feel that that we've learned much about it? I mean, apparently, from what you and your colleagues on the Boston Globe have done, which is where most of the reporting has come, one gets the impression that that within the world of his church, he's a sort of different person. That's when he's relaxed and humble and likable and all of those things that the likability factor that we've been talking about, that in effect he's more comfortable in that milieu, and certainly that's where most of his charity has gone through tithing, etc. So have we had an opportunity to peek inside the world that he's most comfortable in, if indeed I'm correct in that analysis?
Not yet. I mean, I think that they've sort of chosen to portray him as, you know, a devout man, a man of faith, you know, somebody who's dedicated to his church, without offering a lot of details about, you know, what it's like and what he does. Now, you referenced the Globe's reporting, which I personally can't take a lot of credit for, but over time, you know, a picture does emerge that, you know, he quietly visits Mormons who are in the hospital. He helps to settle families. He even serves as kind of a spiritual advisor for families that are in some degree of turmoil and things. And that is a very interesting, noteworthy thing, that somebody who's running for president would be comfortable playing those types of roles. But I think because the Mormons are a minority religion, a very small minority religion in this country, and because there are concerns, many of them, overblown, sort of in the mythical conspiracy theory category, particularly among some evangelical groups about Mormons. They've chosen not to go there, and it's sort of too bad. And I would tend to apportion the blame more on the people who've put out, frankly, prejudiced stories about Mormons than about the Romney preference for secrecy.
So, Peter Kanellis, again in Tampa, Florida, the editor of the Boston Globe's editorial page, and he served as editor of the Globe's 7-part series on Mitt Romney. Tonight, of course, John McCain, I think John McCain's probably speaking now, and then later Condoleezza Rice will be speaking. He sat between Condoleezza and his wife last night, Mitt Romney. And then, of course, Paul Ryan will be giving the keynote speech. We're going to be talking a little while to Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, former chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell, who worked with Condoleezza Rice, about what she might be saying or what Romney foreign policy might look like. What do you think Ryan is going to do tonight?
Yeah, I think Ryan is going to try to appear to be sort of youthful and charismatic. You know, you're going to see a man kind of happily coming into his own, claiming a big prize that he probably didn't have much reason to expect a month or two ago that he would have had. The party likes and respects him in a way that they haven't yet shown to Mitt Romney. And so I expected to have sort of the air of a kind of a love fest going on in there. In terms of the message that he wants to project to the rest of the country, particularly undecided voters, I think he wants to justify their perception of him as an intellectual, as a man of ideas, as a politician of principle, and yet take the edge off of the way that his policies have been portrayed both by the Democrats but also by certain neutral parties. Try to make it seem less threatening, make his budget seem like it's a kind of common sense document and not an ideological document, put a kind of happy, optimistic face on the Romney-Ryan candidacy.
Well, Peter Kanellis, I thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Peter Kanellis, who's in Tampa, Florida. He's the editor of the Boston Globe's editorial page, and previously he's been the Globe's Washington bureau chief and the author of the National Perspective column from 2003. since 2003. In 2007, he served as editor of the Globe seven-part series on Mitt Romney. He also served as editor of the Globe seven-part series on the life of Ted Kennedy and was editor of Last Line, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about Condoleezza Rice with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson.